Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Let's start today at Wydad Circle. The MBTA just spent $255 million on land there. It's in the crook of the expressway near South Boston. And their intention, a rail yard. But Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton says that is $250 million in failed vision. The congressman's on the line. Congressman Moulton, welcome back.
It's good to be here, Tiziana. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So you spelled out what you think the vision ought to be recently in the Boston Business Journal. So let's go to Wydad Circle, $255 million spent. What should the vision for that land be?
It should be the entrance point for the North-South Rail Link to truly connect all the rail services in Massachusetts so that you can get on a train in Salem and get to the South Shore. So you don't have to change stations in the center of Boston. And if you do that, if you build the tunnel, then you actually take all that dirt and rock from the tunnel, you raise the level of Wydad Circle to make it climate resilient, which it's not today. You basically make it climate resilient for free. And then you have a several billion dollar real estate asset that can be used to pay for the tunnel. Instead, what does the MBTA want to do? They want to just ruin it with a rail yard. Not only that, they're going to ruin it with a rail yard that will be underwater because of climate change.
So have you talked to the MBTA about this or heard from them since you put the article out in the BBJ?
I have not heard a peep.
And how much do
you... Literally not heard a peep.
How much do you think it would cost to do that? Previous estimations say, you know, $10 to $15 billion. That was the estimation from the Department of Transportation 5 years ago to build a North-South rail link.
Well, actually, we had Harvard look at this, and they thought the cost was a lot less, closer to $5 billion. But let's just take $10 billion as a round number, as a conservative round number. You're going to get several billion dollars worth of real estate assets out of Wydad Circle, and you're going to make $50 million every single year just in taxes from that land. That's going to go a long way to paying for $10 billion. You're also not going to have to expand South Station. That's a $3 or $4 billion project, and you're not going to have to expand North Station. That's a $5 or $6 billion project down the road. You add up those numbers, and all of a sudden, this is a no-brainer. You actually save money by doing the North-South Rail Link instead of all these other projects that would be required in its absence.
So, Congressman, how is this, though, not proposing, and I know you've heard this pushback, how is this not essentially proposing the next big dig? The last one did not go well.
Great question, because you're right. In the last big dig, which, by the way, everybody loves today, nobody regrets, but it didn't go very well in the process. Well, this is just an entirely different construction technique. When we built the big dig, we essentially dug a trench in the middle of downtown Boston with a highway actively running above it, and then built a new highway underneath. That had actually never been done before in the world. When we're talking about with building the rail link is using these new tunnel boring machines that go deep under the city, creating no disturbances above whatsoever. And this is a technique that's been used by literally dozens of cities around the globe. London just completed its third cross-city rail link. And even in downtown London, you couldn't even tell construction was in progress except for where the stations were being built. So this is actually tried and true. It's proven technology. It doesn't create anything like the disturbances that we saw from the North-South, building the big dig. And in fact, the only disturbance you would see is at Wydad Circle. But it's a really positive disturbance because you're bringing all the dirt and rock from the tunnel, using it to raise the land, making it climate resilient, and ultimately creating a great asset for the city of Boston.
So a couple of things. You know, during the Baker administration, and I do want to note then Governor Baker, when this the idea of the North-South Rail Link came up about 5 years ago, had said at the time it was too expensive. You have pushed back on that. We've had that piece of the conversation. But that administration was heavily criticized, including by the Federal Transit Administration, for overemphasizing capital projects, underemphasizing safety and maintenance. So the idea of taking on something of this scale as we are limping through, I mean, just honestly, as a constituent, right, a rolling safety nightmare and maintenance nightmare with the MBTA, why do you believe the MBTA could take on a project of this scale at Wadette Circle while the rest of what's happening is unfolding in front of us, Congressman?
A great question, because we all know what a disaster the T is today. And there's two fundamental answers. The first is the T of today, the MBTA as we know it in this moment, can't take on a project like this. Let's just be honest. We need fundamental reforms at the T to just get the T back to what we expect of any rail system anywhere in America or anywhere in the world. But I have a lot of confidence in Philip Eng and his new team that he's bringing in to do that, and to do it in short order. But the second way to look at this is that actually large infrastructure projects like this are usually best managed not by the transit agency itself, but by a public-private partnership, a conglomerate formed, established with a specific mission of completing a project like this. This is the way that it's been, that these projects have been done most successfully all around the globe.
So two remaining questions for you, Congressman Moulton. The first on this subject, later in the hour, we're speaking with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey about competitiveness in the state, clearly a transit system key to competitiveness. What is your most urgent message for Governor Healey when it comes to the MBTA?
My most urgent message is that you've got to fix the problems of today. We all agree on that. But we also finally need to have a transformative vision for the future. If we want to really embrace the potential of Massachusetts, which means that everybody who wants to work here can find an affordable place to live, which means that Massachusetts starts attracting more people to the state instead of scaring them away as we are today. If we want to be a city that competes on the world stage, then you have to have a transformative vision for how to get around the Commonwealth. We have the worst traffic in the country. People cannot afford to live here because they can't commute to where the jobs are from where they can afford to buy a home.
All right, and last question. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's okay.
All right, last question. I'm going to turn our attention from Massachusetts to Washington. I know you know the White House. There's a meeting there between President Biden and congressional leaders today on the standoff over the debt ceiling. This is a very serious game of brinksmanship happening. I want to ask you, are we in a situation where it is possible that the parties do not reach agreement before the U.S. runs out of money, Congressman?
Yes, it's possible, because the Republican Party is holding America hostage. And I'm a pretty bipartisan guy, but let's be honest. Every time we needed to raise the debt ceiling under President Trump, Democrats in Congress voted to do that because it's the right thing for our country. But today's Republican Party is held hostage by a few extremists. Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, can't control them. And as a result, they're holding the entire nation's economy hostage to their extreme demands.
Do you believe we will get an acceptable outcome?
I mean, you're literally negotiating with these utter extremists. The extremist is a polite term, all right? And so I'm not sure. And that's a frightening place to be for our country.
All right. Massachusetts Congressman Seth Moulton represents the 6th Congressional District. Thanks so much for the time today.
Thank you, Tiziana.
We're talking about the T here on Radio Boston. Congressman Seth Moulton was with us arguing that the MBTA is squandering an opportunity to redevelop Wadette Circle. Chris Dempsey and Stacey Thompson heard that conversation. They're both here in Studio 2. Chris is former Massachusetts Assistant Secretary of Transportation. Stacey is Executive Director of Livable Streets Alliance. Welcome to both of you.
Great to be back.
All right. So obviously, first thing I want to do is get your reactions to that conversation. Stacey, you're up first.
Great. So I think
the Wedette Circle conversation has transformed a lot since 2015. You know, 5-7 years ago, we were talking about putting a soccer stadium there.
For an Olympic bid. Chris had something to do with
Chris had some feelings about. So I want to start with the good. I think it's good that the MBTA is looking to purchase this land because the opportunity there is great. I think it's a tad premature to decide exactly what to do there, but I think that using it for the public good, using it for transit, and ensuring that you can develop on it, collect tax revenue in the future are good directions. But the T doesn't even own the land yet. So I think we need to start there and then work with the T to influence the best possible use.
Chris.
So I've known Congressman Moulton since before he ran for Congress. He has always been passionate about public transportation. And I think we need more elected leaders who care about public transportation in the way that he does. My focus is on the first part of the equation that he set out, which is let's make sure we have reforms at the T to get the basic system right, improve the safety, improve the experience for everyday riders, and then let's have a broader conversation about what the future can be.
Okay, so I hear both of you, and I was really curious. I really didn't know what the two of you were going to say right into response to the congressman's position. But what's wrong with a big, hairy, audacious goal, to use that old phrase, right? Especially in one, I mean, today we're going to be talking with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey in a little bit about competitiveness, the kind of vision to connect the North and the South and the East and the rest so you can get on a train, and what it would solve in terms of housing and transit, et cetera. What's wrong with throwing down and saying, get that done?
There's nothing wrong with saying that. I think it's a question of limited sort of physical resources. We need to focus on the red to blue connector. We need to connect the trains out to Worcester and beyond. We also need the North-South rail link. And we need to be thinking big and holistically about all of those things. Where I would agree with the senator is that we need to have a more comprehensive plan, look at how all of these big projects are connected to each other. And I would also agree that we need to be able to fix our safety problems and our operational problems while we're thinking big. I wouldn't focus on this one project, though. I would go even bigger and say, what does the state need to be competitive in 2030, 2040, and 2050? And this is just one of those projects.
And I'm going to chuckle and say you were thinking big for Moulton because you referred to Moulton as the senator there.
Oh, God.
Every congressman wants to be a senator. That's what they say, right? Every senator wants to be president. So,
so Chris, and one of the things that we did talk with the congressman about was this interesting balance constantly between safety and maintenance and capital improvements, yeah. Right? Which the state got burned on from, you know, the federal, the FTA last year. So how do we think about, you know, the chewing gum and the walking and the building and the maintaining and all of that?
So these are not mutually exclusive ideas. And I think that Stacy's point is an important one. Buying Wedette Circle allows the future option of building the tunnel, if that's what the congressman thinks is the right vision and others agree with him. There are other steps that we can take towards something like the North-South Rail that also improve operations today. Let me just give you one specific example. You can't run diesel trains under a tunnel in downtown Boston. You have to electrify the trains. So if we're going to ultimately—
Wait, why? Just educate.
Just for safety and for ventilation reasons. You have to have them electric. So if we're going to make the trains electric, why don't we start with some of the lines we already are running today? The Fairmont line is a great example. It's a diesel locomotive system today. It runs through environmental justice communities that already have poor air quality. If we electrify that line, we've made improvements for people today. We've also learned more about what it will take for the MBTA to ultimately electrify the entire system, which is a longer-term goal.
So the last thing that I'm hearing there, and then we're going to move on to some other headlines, is it is possible also to have something like using in the future Wedette Circle as a connector for a North-South rail line, as an organizing principle that would allow us to make some very practical investments and changes today that move us forward, fix problems we have today, and keep us with an eye towards a bigger vision in the future.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, the questions we have around safety, around hiring, all of those are pieces of the puzzle that Chris is describing. If we're going to electrify the Fairmont line, we need to have a team in place to move that capital project forward. So the everything that Philip Eng and the MBTA is doing today is a building block toward that larger vision. So these are intimately connected issues.
All right. Well, you said hiring, so we may as well stay there. And we've got Stacy Thompson of Livable Streets and Chris Dempsey, former former Massachusetts Assistant Secretary of Transportation here, and we keep having you back every week because the T keeps making headlines every week that are worth taking the time to talk about. And actually, I do want to hit the hiring one briefly. The Boston Globe story late last week reporting that the T is making progress on hiring workers, but at a speed that could mean that to fill its needs could take a decade. Right. So 141 net total employees over the past 10 months and lots of reasons for that. But that is so daunting, Chris Dempsey. Yeah. First, Philip Eng, the new general manager, has said, listen, the things that are making us slow are within our control. Are they? And if so, how fast can we move those barriers out of the way?
Tiziana, when I worked at MassDOT and worked closely with the T long before the pandemic, and some of your listeners may remember this, there was actually a lottery for MBTA positions. For every, say, 500 bus driver positions, there might be 5,000 or 10,000 applicants because those jobs were seen as desirable because they provided a stable job with good wages and good predictability. They were competitive relative to other jobs that maybe someone who doesn't have a college degree can access. Today, we are in a situation where the MBTA is begging people, providing $7,500 bonuses to people to start the process of becoming a bus driver. So things have really flipped over the last 5 or 6 years.
So what exactly explicitly changed?
Well, I think that the wages have not kept up to be competitive with other jobs. We've seen inflation and we haven't seen those wages increase. We saw a deal that was struck between the Baker administration and the MBTA Carmen's Union that I think was pretty favorable to existing employees at the T, but much less favorable to those who would come on and join the system. And then I think, look, it's a tough job to be a bus driver. And people now have different options and opportunities for where they're going to spend their time, what their profession is going to be. Bus drivers are on the front lines of the transit crisis, but oftentimes the front lines of the public health crisis that we see, the front lines of law enforcement and crime, because they are interacting with passengers and having difficult interactions or conversations with those folks. So they're having to deal with a lot in a role that doesn't pay that well, that doesn't necessarily set them up for a longer term opportunity. And that's going to be a real challenge.
Okay, Stacey, some of what Chris just said seems hard to fix, right? But some of it seems very fixable. So like, what are two things that we could change now to make it more attractive?
I can name three things.
Let's do this.
Yeah. So, and I think what's promising is that the general manager of the T has already named these things and has been explicit that the T needs to go back to the drawing board with the Carmen's Union and renegotiate some of this stuff. But the top three things that we know are sort of holding hiring back include increasing wages to be competitive, ensuring that folks can start as full-time employees. Right now, bus drivers have to start as part-time.
That seems huge.
And you can't have two part-time jobs if you don't know what your shifts are. And the third piece is split shifts, which more junior operators need to work a few hours in the morning, wait all day, work a few hours in the evening. If you're a mom with two kids, you can't get daycare for that. It's an impossible job. So those three things seem to be the biggies. And then there are, a few things in between, improving working conditions, et cetera.
And practically speaking, how long would it take to fix those three things?
So the T is in negotiations right now. I think you could start seeing some of these changes relatively soon. Another hurdle is that the HR department isn't able to keep up with the number of applications they're getting for these jobs and other jobs. That is something that the T has full control over and needs to be focused on so that they can move applicants through these processes more quickly.
In Stacey's list of three items, and she's exactly right there, I think the first two are very fixable. You could do that within 6 months. That's changing the wages and allowing bus drivers to start as full-time. The split shifts is a little harder because the nature of transit is that you need a lot of people for the morning commute and you need a lot of people for the evening commute. And you're running much less service, especially bus service, in the middle of the day. So that's a difficult one for transit agencies across the country. We're making it even harder on ourselves with those first two items she mentioned.
And people might be more forgiving about dealing with the third one if they weren't also dealing with the first.
That's correct.
All right, I do want to hit a couple of other headlines. The woman who was struck by a brace holding up a utility box that fell off the wall at Harvard Station, we've talked about it the last couple of weeks, new news coming every week. Earlier this month says she plans to sue the T. Jocelyn Johnson spoke with WBZ-TV. Here's that sound.
What are they doing to facilitate, I guess, proper maintenance in the T? And what are the inspections that are taking place? And are they done properly and well by the people who are working for the T?
So obviously, a person, individual person, has a right to a lawsuit. Reactions to the choice by this individual to sue, and what roles will suits play? I mean, we're hearing a litany of these suits after a litany of crises and safety incidents. Stacey, how do we process that?
Yeah, so agreeing with you, every individual has a right to sue. I think sometimes that is what we want to focus on as the public, but I think whether it's this lawsuit or some of the other lawsuits that have come forward, what we know is happening behind the scenes is a real hard look at the processes that the MBTA has to inspect stations and rail, right? You could put 15 lawsuits out, and if they don't help the MBTA sort of self-reflect and fix those problems, then they don't address the larger structural issues. So I think what I am more interested in is hearing what the T is doing to improve those daily inspections of all MBTA stations and what they're doing in their capital projects to improve ADA compliance, improve safety, and improve maintenance across all of their facilities.
Okay, Chris, on Saturday, fare vending machines at several Orange Line stations crashed, meaning riders couldn't add money to their Charlie cards first. What do you do for riders immediately? I mean, so now I'm in a station. I need to put money on my card. I can't. What do you do for riders? Do you just let them on the train? What do you do?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the answer in a world where you're not able to add a fare to a customer. The T, as we know, doesn't cover its costs with fares alone, and it should not be a barrier to someone accessing the system if the MBTA is at fault for not having a fare collection system that works.
Okay, and second, things will break sometimes, even in really high-functioning organizations. So is this one a big deal? It's hard to tell anymore, right?
So the fare collection challenges represent a much bigger question at the T, which is the automated fare collection update. Everyone knows the Charlie card. We've had that since 2006, 2007, when it was nation-leading in terms of its technology and its ability to serve riders. It is now somewhat out of date, although there are systems that are still operating fare collection programs that are much older than ours. But about 5 or 6 years ago, the MBTA undertook a process called Automated Fare Collection 2.0, Fare Transformation, the new Charlie card. That project is now multiple years delayed. It is at least $300 million over budget.
Ouch.
And it is holding back our ability to understand what the future will be for fare collection. The MBTA is reluctant to invest in that existing Charlie card system to put in necessary dollars to keep that running when it's expecting this new system to come online. Every month or every year that new system gets delayed, it's more and more costly to keep that existing system up to date. It's a total mess. And I hope that the new general manager, I'm sure he will be looking at that as he's tackling issue after issue at the T.
I am getting tired on behalf of the new general manager as these news stories continue to kind of unfold, Stacey.
You know, I think that Philip Eng knew what he was getting into, and I've seen a surprising amount of energy and enthusiasm to tackle these challenges. So I look forward to hearing what we're going to do about fare collection. I completely agree with Chris. It's a mess, but it's a solvable problem. I think the takeaway here is every single one of the things we talked about today has a reasonable and achievable solution. We just have to get to work.
All right, so let's do one more here. Cable at Central Station in Cambridge started to give off smoke Saturday. T says nothing actually caught fire, but it had to shut off power to the third rail. Shuttle buses temporarily replaced Red Line service between Davis and Park. How dangerous is a situation like that?
So it depends on how the MBTA staff handle situations like this. As you mentioned earlier, all transit systems experience conditions, making sure that staff is well trained to evacuate people when necessary, to make sure that people are moving through the system as needed is what's important. My understanding is that things were okay. We didn't have any catastrophes, but it's really about the training and about the emergency response in these situations.
So you're listening to Radio Boston. We're talking about the MBTA right now with Chris Dempsey, who's the former Massachusetts Assistant Secretary for Transportation, and Stacey Thompson, Executive Director of Livable Streets. I want to let listeners know we are anticipating a conversation coming up with Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey. The governor's making her way to our office at the State House, and we'll bring you that conversation shortly. In the meantime, I want to talk about sort of the complement of new people who have come into, into T staffing, into safety, et cetera. Chris, we touched on this last week. I feel like each week, all right, so you know those things when you're watching on TV and somebody is sketching out a picture, right? And as each thing sketches further, you start to get a sense of what they're drawing. I feel like for Philip Ng, each week now, he's getting a clearer sense of what the picture and the sketch is. Stacy just said, I think he already knew what the picture looked like, right? Perhaps I am simply being a little bit incredulous of that, or maybe not. But as this picture gets clearer and clearer for this new MBTA general manager, what's the timeline? And we've got the governor coming into the office, so this will be the last question. What's the timeline that he's now mapping out before he's not sort of, you know, like the, you know, the whack-a-mole covering this hole and this hole with one foot in one hand and one foot in one hand?
So he's looking at the first 100 days, and he's probably pretty close to that number pretty soon, then probably a six-month plan, then a one-year plan, and then a longer-term, maybe 4 or 5 year plan. I think we're all encouraged by the fact that he started strong, and we need consistency at leadership at the MBTA. And so I think all of us are hoping that he will be there for 3, 4, 5, 6 more years. I also want to just point out, as the governor comes into this conversation, that she's created a strong team, and she's matched Phil Ng, who has strong operational experience, with the new chairman, Tom Glenn, who's someone who knows Massachusetts transportation maybe better than anybody, and a new strong safety chief. So that's a good team to tackle this problem together.
All right, Chris Dempsey, Stacy Thompson, thanks so much to both of you.
Thank you.
There's more ahead with Governor Maura Healey. I'm Tiziana Deering. This is Radio Boston.